Sophie Rose is Assistant Curator of International Art at the Queensland Art Gallery, the Gallery of Modern Art. Sophie is the first to receive the Dame Quentin Bryce John Monash Scholarship, graduating from the University of Queensland with a Bachelor of Arts First Class Honours in Art History and receiving a University Medal for her studies. Sophie has gone on to help realise several exhibitions of contemporary and historical art at the Queensland Art Gallery and, most recently, European masterpieces from the Metropolitan Museum of Art. She's about to embark on a Master of Arts at the Centre of Curatorial Studies at Bard College in the United States. And Sophie, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Okay, so Bard College. I had to Google that. I had not heard of Bard College before. So tell me about Bard College and why you picked it.
You know, unlike the really big Ivy League colleges in the US, for instance, it's a liberal arts college, so it's much smaller. It doesn't kind of have that big international profile, but it is fairly well known within the arts. And where I'm going is it's a kind of a really specialized center within Bard College that it was set up in 94, which sounds very recent, but for curatorial studies, that's actually quite old. It's one of the first that set up this program that was different to art history. So really, I think where I'm studying really will be at this center, the Center of Curatorial Studies. And I had, you know, a really good time. I actually visited recently.
Oh, so you went there. What's it like?
It is small. It's kind of a beautiful setting. It's in upstate New York, so about an hour and a half from the city, really in quite a rural area. And the center itself is all in one building, which is really interesting. So they have, you know, where they teach the classes and the library and the museum where you curate your final graduate show. It's all in one place. So it's really this hub, which is great.
And so when you begin your master's, what does that look like? What do you have to do to complete your work?
Yeah, so it's course-based and for the first year, and there's a number of different electives you can do, but it's really split between, I guess, theory and practice, which is what appealed to me. So you learn, you know, a lot of art theory and kind of critical theory, but you also have a chance to, in the first year, you curate a show with your classmates, which will be really interesting.
Wonder what that will be.
Yeah, well, I have no idea.
Who knows? Yeah.
Yeah, what we come up with, and then the final project, you write a small thesis, but the final project really is curating this exhibition of your own, which is displayed in the museum that's part of the center. So it's got this really interesting split, and I think that for me, my point of my career is really where I wanted to go. I've been working as assistant curator at Qualcomm in Brisbane for almost 5 years now. So I feel like I wanted to keep up that actual practice of actually making things and making something that you can see in the space, something tangible at the end of the day.
And so that the actual master's course, how long will that take you?
Oh, yeah, sorry. It's 2 years.
Couple of years.
So Yeah, standard MA time.
And then once you finish that, what's the plan? Would you stay over in America or come back home to Brisbane?
It's a little bit open-ended, to be honest. I think, you know, if there's an opportunity in America, that would be great to follow.
It's very exciting. I'm excited for you.
Oh, thank you. Me too. Excited and terrified. But there might be opportunities there or even, you know, somewhere in Europe. I think eventually I want to return to Australia. I really enjoy, or I'm really proud of actually, our kind of tradition of public art galleries and museums. And I think there's something
in Australia.
In Australia, yeah. And I think there's something very special that you kind of almost, you forget about when you're here, but...
How good they are, yeah.
Yeah, how good they are. And to have something that's free and truly accessible to everyone, it's like I see them as kind of in the same camp as, you know, Medicare and kind of relatively cheap tertiary education. Like it's one of these things that really we're very lucky to have and should really endeavour to keep as kind of enriched as possible.
Which, I know you're from Queensland, but which ones are your favourites? No doubt you would have seen a few.
Yeah, I mean, I think all the big galleries are interesting. I think there's a lot of university galleries in Australia that are also doing really interesting things, and again, they're sort of publicly funded spaces that are a bit smaller. Like I know, for instance, the gallery at Monash University, MUMMA, is really interesting, and there's so many spaces. I mean, I kind of am most interested in somewhere I really want to get to before I leave is, say, go over to Perth and see their Pika.
What have they got there?
They've got their kind of state gallery, and also they have an Institute of Contemporary Art, which I think is doing really interesting things. And like often those places that are slightly, away from the centre, the kind of, you know, so-called provincial places, I think actually can do really interesting things. And so sometimes those, I think what I found is those sort of more medium-sized places often produce things that are maybe a little bit more risk-taking, but also the big galleries I think have such a broader reach, which is also really important.
Have you been to the one in Tasmania? Is it Mona?
I have been a very long time ago, and it has a very different flavour because it's not government.
Old and new.
Yeah, it's old and new, and also it's built off one David Walsh, who's sort of a professional gambler, I think, his collection. So it's actually quite idiosyncratic in a way, and it's so that one's a bit different because it kind of has the scale of a state gallery, but is actually a private collection.
Just random stuff in there, is it? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they have curators, and they definitely, you know, it's not just him and his vision, but it comes from a slightly different model.
How did you first get interested in art? I'm curious to know what got you started on this journey.
Yeah, I think, I mean, probably like a lot of kids, I always really loved drawing, and then I really got into like art making in high school and was kind of almost addicted to it. I think like I remember going in at 7:30 before school and going into the art rooms, and then like even going, you know, during lunchtime and after school, and kind of it just became really this
your thing,
this slight my thing and my slight obsession. But then I think also I realized in in high school,
my obsession.
Well, yeah, if we're honest. But and then I think I realized in high school as well that actually what I liked even more than painting or making art was writing about art, and I think something about turning, you know, finding a way to describe something visual in language, and the kind of the challenge of that, but also the excitement in a way when you can describe something in language and you can draw out something that makes you look at an artwork differently. And then from that kind of from really enjoying the few art history assignments we had at school, I decided to do art history and English literature at uni. And then, yeah, so that, and then art history became kind of the more prominent one, and I did my honours year in art history. And, I mean, I didn't know what a curator was at all.
I was going to ask that. So when you go down that pathway, are there a lot of jobs out there for you?
No.
Or is it pretty tough in the job market? It's not as if, you know, you're a lawyer or something where it's like, okay, I can do a million things in law. Within art history, that's a little bit more niche. That's, I imagine, would be a bit tougher.
Definitely. Yeah, there's not a huge job prospect, but I think there's more than people realize, and I think you do, in a way, you have to kind of take a bit of a risk in that there's no guaranteed outcome. But I've been surprised by just how many different roles there are in the arts. Curating is just one of them, especially at these bigger galleries. We have people, art conservators, people who deal with the logistics, which we call registrars. We have kind of project managers, and it really is kind of surprising how many people it takes to put on an exhibition. But anyway, I had no idea what a curator was. I don't think I had ever heard the word, definitely until I got to uni. And I don't think people have heard the word in the sense of, curating your Instagram feed or the
SCG pitch for the cricket.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. It is funny when you go on, job websites and type in curator, there's a lot of lawn curators.
Which, expertise in turf. Yeah, no.
Yeah, yeah. So a different sort of care and a different sort of management, I guess, of art rather than grass. But I kind of found out what it was at uni, and I think so almost by accident, I think I found something that was really set up for something that kind of satisfied a lot of things that I wanted to do. So there was the art historical side. There's, a great amount of research and writing that we do to put on a show or to buy an artwork for the gallery. But also I think it kind of satisfied a slightly more, a more creative side of me of you're not just working with language, you're also working in space. And I think a good exhibition is it's like an essay or a journey that you create visually in space. And I really love things down to like picking the right frames, picking the right wall color. I think all of those things can seem, they could seem sort of decorative or frivolous even, but I think that actually all of those things help communicate what you're trying to say with art. So I love, working from the kind of big theory right down to those little details.
Well, let's get into that, if I may. What goes into curating an exhibition? Because for an average punter turning up, they might say, oh, that looks good, or I don't like that one, or I'd be keen to know the level of detail and organisation and thinking behind putting an exhibition together.
Yeah, most people are surprised when I say, I'd say the average time for planning an exhibition is 3 years, especially for a big
wow.
one.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, truly. And it's, I think, when you think of all the steps that have to happen, often the shows that I've worked on are what we call group exhibitions. So they include a number of different artists, and often those artists will speak to a theme or some sort of topic and will really play off each other. So there's a big, big part of the process at the beginning, which is really just, doing a whole lot of research, seeing, finding books for other exhibitions that have happened, reading articles, trying to find the best artists who can kind of come together and tell a particular story, whether that's, relating to a theme. Like I did a show, I didn't do it. I worked on a show in 2019 that was just called Water, and it was really looking at how have artists responded to this really basic element of water, and what role does water play in our kind of broader lives today with climate change and sort of the politics around that, but also all the cultural meanings that it has across different cultures. So that was a show where, we kind of had this very broad theme, and then it was a process of not just finding artists who could relate to the theme. Like, it's not just a sort of Where's Wally of, you know, who's painting an ocean or something, but you create sort of sub arguments within that theme. So it's kind of finding a way that you can select artists who you think are making really meaningful work, really interesting work that perhaps the public hasn't seen before, but also there's this wonderful chemistry of a group show where it becomes more than the sum of its parts, I guess. So you, by putting the artists into a sort of spatial relationship, you know, you find different connections between them, and you can bring out something that you know, they say something more together, I think. So that's the very theoretical side of making an exhibition. And then you really get into the logistics, and I'm trying to think to give a summary of our process. So there's a big process of just finalizing the list of artworks, and that involves getting permissions from the artists. Sometimes we commission.
What would you need potentially? Is it, you know, hundreds of artworks for one exhibition?
Yeah, for a big one, like for the water exhibition, and actually I'm working on, for the end of this year, the gallery is putting out a sort of follow-up called Air, so working with a similar premise. But for a big exhibition like that, it would be probably about 100 artworks, maybe about 40 artists, depending. So there's a lot of sort of reaching out to artists or looking for works that are already in our permanent collection that the gallery owns, and also all reaching out to other museums. So we loan from other museums sometimes.
Is that a delicate balancing act?
Yeah, it is. And it's, and then also the other thing we sometimes do is, I guess, give a financial contribution to an artist so they can make a new work. So that's another process altogether. But you kind of have to, you can imagine with all those different parties, there's a lot of negotiation that has to go around just to confirm.
I bet. I mean, you don't even think about that, all the things that are happening behind the scenes. Yes.
Yes. And then, you know, and then we work with our really brilliant registration team who organize things like the freight. Like, you know, somewhere like GOMA deals with sometimes really huge installations and kind of just the logistics of, well, how do you get, you know, like for...
That's right. How do we get that waterfall into our gallery?
Yeah, absolutely. And that a good example of that is for water. We restaged a work by the Finnish artist Olafur Eliasson. He has a work which is just called Riverbed, and it really is it's like a indoor segment of the landscape. So it has flowing water, it has like tons and tons of rock, and you can imagine just finding out where to source these rocks, how to get the water engineering in the gallery, you know, how to make it seem effortless. There's so much work that goes into making these things seem effortless, and that's, you know, we really rely on the registrars and also on our we have an exhibition design team at the gallery, which is really not all galleries have that. So it's really great to have them on board. So there's kind of all these, you know, there's all these things to consider in just getting artwork into the gallery. And then, you know, and then often we produce a catalogue that goes with the exhibition. So a book that goes deeper into the different artists' works and you know, often we'll kind of tease out these more theoretical things. So that also is kind of like a separate project in itself, and you can imagine there's a lot of writing for that, a lot of research that goes into that. And then And then you kind of work towards, I guess, marketing the show, you know, reaching out to media people and everything.
You need the foot traffic through the door. Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely. And then also there's kind of once the show's open, there's this, you know, this kind of second wave where you have to then kind of do public talks. And it's really great if you can have artists in the gallery and you can kind of do a talk about their work. And there's this sort of second stage. It's quite surreal, actually, because often you've been working on something for, you know, 2 or 3 years by yourself. No one knows about it. And then suddenly it's in the public space and everyone's saying, you know, have you seen that?
That's what you've been doing.
That's what you've been doing. But also, you know, people might not even know that you've been working on that. So they'll say, oh, have you seen that water exhibition? And suddenly then it becomes about communicating that show to the public.
Yeah, that's what I've been working on for the past 3 years.
Yeah, a little bit. And hopefully by that point, you have some phrases under your belt. But so it kind of is curatorial curators often in these big places, especially as sort of the nucleus of a much bigger web of people. So we definitely don't do everything, but we're kind of, you know, we're there for all the stages and ultimately the sort of ideas, I guess, come out of our department. So, yeah, that's probably a very long-winded way to explain it, but
No, I loved it. It was fantastic. Thank you.
Oh, good.
So in your view, Sophie, obviously very subjective, but what's your definition of good art or great art? I know that's a hard one to answer, but have a crack at it.
I mean, it's stumped philosophers for centuries, so I'm not sure how good my answer's going to be. But
we're breaking new ground on the Scholars Podcast.
Yes, indeed. I think for me, I mean, good art is something that makes you think in a different way or feel in a different way. And I think that's probably as close as I can get to a kind of definition. I think art, in a way, contemporary art especially, is this kind of amazing magpie discipline where, you know, artists can make work about all different sorts of things in the world. Like they can make work about the environment or scientific things or philosophical things or social issues or even just sort of art about art. So in a way, I think the role of art in our society is it doesn't just ask the how but the why, and it gives potency to all these other things that are going on in the world. It's a way to make sense of these things, and it's a way to I think allow people to think through these bigger issues in a different way, but also in a much more emotional way, you might say. Like I think we remember a work of art much more than we remember a news article, for instance.
Now, that is true. That is true. For someone who has studied art and devoted a career to it, what are some of your favorite artworks that are out there, whether it's, you know, some of the classic masterpieces or some of the contemporary works? What are some of your personal favourites, but potentially ones that you've seen in the flesh as well?
This is another very hard question. Maybe I'll just answer it by ones that are kind of in the forefront of my mind because, you know, certain artists I've seen recently or hoping to work with. So, I mean, one that just springs to mind is this incredible contemporary artist, Stora Budor, who's from Croatia but has now moved to New York, actually. So we might be kind of neighbours. But she created this incredible work, which I first saw in Istanbul, which if you imagine kind of almost like big fish tanks, and they are filled with these swirling pigments. And you realize slowly as you approach them that these colors are swirling because there's little puffs of air that are coming from the bottom of them. And they look almost like, Martian landscapes or something. And they have this very calming and almost surreal presence. But then when you read the label, you find out that actually those works are responding to the noise of a construction site nearby. So when the construction is kind of loud, the chambers become really turbulent, and then you can imagine when it's quieter, they become more still.
What happens in the middle of the night? There's nothing.
Well, yeah, the gallery's closed, but it's just some, you know, I think that's like a really smart and quite poetic way to think about what are the changes that are happening in our urban landscape and these things, you know, the kind of topography of our cities is in fact always changing. You know, people are always digging and building, and she's thinking about those things, but has found a really simple and beautiful way to show that. So I think that's an example of an artist making you see the world differently. After seeing that work, I do think a lot more about kind of this weird, these weird almost mutations that are happening across cities.
Fascinating. It's a great answer. Tell me, Sophie, how do Australians stack up on the world stage when it comes to art?
I think Australian artists are truly some of the best. I think we are in such an interesting position, you know, having a kind of colonial past and a very, very dark past, but that kind of hybridity, I guess, that Australian culture has, I think, produces really interesting work. And the sort of, you know, the tension in Australia, for want of a better word, I think produces really interesting, diverse work. And, yeah, I mean, there's so many Australian artists that I could talk about. But one of the reasons that I kind of would like to study overseas, I guess, as opposed to here, is being able to put those artists in a different context and kind of hopefully maybe also introducing some of my peers to the work of Australian artists.
Spread the word.
Absolutely, and really advocate for them as well.
I'm keen to know when you applied for the scholarship, what was the reaction? Well, because I've interviewed a lot of scholars. There are a few artists, not many. What was the process like of going through all of that and having to think about what you wanted to do and why you wanted to study?
It's a really helpful process, actually. Like, I think even if anyone's thinking about applying, even if you're not successful, I think it makes you realize, you know, actually what you want to do in your career. And I think for art, and definitely for kind of for curating, it's much harder to make an argument for what art can provide for society as opposed to, you know, like a doctor in palliative care or something.
Mm,
like it's not as obvious. But I think doing the process, it was really helpful for me to realize that I am really interested in what art and museums can provide to the sort of civic sphere, because I think we want civic life to be sort of equitable and free and comfortable, but also really enriched, and to provide a chance for anyone to be able to have these sort of these experiences where they can think and feel differently. And I think for me, it was doing the process made me realize, again, just how kind of special that tradition of public museums and galleries is in Australia, but also realizing that it's something that we really need to fight to maintain. Because I think what I talked about in my interview, actually, is that I kind of came into the art world in what I see as a very sort of, in a way, a very polarized environment, and not just politically polarized, but in the sense that you have, you know, you have some galleries that are kind of so, in a way, myopic or kind of doing things that are perhaps interesting to the already converted, but quite opaque and quite, you know, unwelcoming to a broader public. And then on the other hand, though, you have these bigger galleries where the pressure to get numbers through the door, and the fact that those numbers really dictate the funding is so great that you get really kind of really populist and not civic, I would say, is the distinction motivations behind exhibitions. Because I think, you know, things, the point of getting people through the door is not just to show them what they already know. I can't think of an example necessarily, but you want people to be challenged as well. And I think that's something we tried to do with water, for instance, where you might come for the big indoor riverbed, but you might stay for something quieter, something like, you know, we had a work by a young Indigenous artist, Ruby Alderton, which was made actually when she was 18, a video work. And that's the sort of thing that people maybe aren't expecting to see. You know, she's not an artist with an international profile, but you can kind of offer, you can offer that along with something popular. But I think if you're only appealing to people with what they already know and what they already want, then that's actually not, that's doing the public a disservice.
I remember taking my wife and kids to the Biennale in Sydney many years ago at Cockatoo Island, and we spent hours there and walked away in a state of utter confusion and exhilaration. Yes. I think all at the same time. We had no idea, Sophie, what was going on. None. But we left with it. Yes. We left with a feeling of, well, that was interesting. That was amazing. When's it on again?
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Well, Sophie, thanks for coming onto the podcast today. It's been great talking with you. We wish you well with your studies later this year in the United States, and hopefully we can catch up again once you've graduated and you're back in Australia. So thank you very much for your time and all the very best.
Thank you.